Let's bring things to order then. It looks like we have a quorum to welcome everybody out tonight to the Southern Region RAC meeting. My name is Steve Flinders. I'm the chair. I represent the Fish Lake and Dixie National Forest. We'll start by introducing the RAC. We'll start down on the left. Brian.
I'm Brian Johnson from Cedar City. I represent non-consumptives.
Mac Morrell from Bicknell, representing agriculture.
Mike Worthen from Cedar City, representing public at large.
Rusty Aiken from Cedar City, representing agricultural.
Sam Carpenter from Kanab, I represent sportsmen.
I'm Doug Messerly, regional supervisor with the Division of Wildlife. Myself and my staff act as executive secretary to this committee, but we don't vote.
Paul Bridge from Cedar City, represent the BLM Southern Region.
Mike Saley from Delta, and I'm a public at large.
Lane Torgerson from Ridgefield, I'm a sportsman's representative.
Dale Bagley from Marysville, I represent an elected official.
Thank you. In the way of meeting procedures, we'll have the Division of Wildlife make a presentation. We'll then proceed to questions by RAC members, and then questions from the public. Would like to hold these questions. Have you come to the mic and give us your name. For comments, we ask you to fill out a comment card. Groups get 5 minutes, individuals 3 minutes. We'll then proceed with motions and voting. With that, I'll ask for approval of the minutes from the previous meeting and the agenda in front of you. Any discussion on the minutes?
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion we accept the minutes and agenda.
Motion by Lane. Seconded by Dale. Those in favor? Yes, thank you. In the way of a wildlife board update, Doug sent out a draft of the motions. A couple of them I'd like to cover. The first one being a motion dealing with mule deer. The motion is by Jake Albright, seconded by John Baer. Passed unanimously. I move that we ask the DWR to bring out a more flexible general season deer unit buck to doe ratio proposal or alternatives versus the current general season deer unit standard, 18 to 25 bucks per 100 does. This proposal will be taken through the RACs and board by May 2012. That meeting's available online if you want to listen to the discussion that went on prior to that, but it has to do with scaling opportunity with buck-to-doe ratios on the small units across the state and whether 18 to 25 fits the bill and is that still what we want to do. The other motion to pass the season dates and timelines as presented. And lastly, I wanted to mention that the motion for Alt and CWMU that we passed here was ratified by the board. Verbatim, with four permits and one to the public. Any questions on the wildlife board meeting?
We're not going to vote on that buck-to-doe ratio then until May?
It'll come back to us in the way of a proposal from the division, whether we'll have permit numbers presented to us or we may see it this spring with the permit recommendations, but okay. We'll see how that works out. Move on to regional update. Doug.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me just expand a little bit more on the question that was just asked and what you just presented with regard to the different buck-to-doe ratios. I think the bottom line is that there's some concern about the limiting of opportunity based on a one-size-fits-all buck-to-doe ratio, and what they'd like to see is for us to evaluate the potential for having a different objective on some units. I think the practical implications of that for us are, at this point, it could change in the future, but I asked a few questions. And I think what you'll see is a proposal with a sliding buck-to-doe ratio for particular units. And also, you'll see a recommendation for permit numbers, because it's all going to happen at the same meeting. For option A, buck-to-doe ratio, or as the plan states now, buck-to-doe ratio. So you'll have two options to choose from. And it'll be a little confusing, but and it's possible that something could change between now and then, but there aren't a lot of opportunities to present this before that happens. So that's what we'll see. I think it was kind of a surprise to many of us that motion was made. It was generated by the board, and you know, we can provide you with the scenarios as we see it. So that's kind of how it shakes down in my mind. That's my impression anyway. Limited entry turkey application period starts tomorrow, and it ends December 28th. The season dates are in April, so you got to be thinking turkey for Christmas. I tell a lot of people that. So be sure and get your turkey application in. This is for the limited entry portion of our turkey hunt. If you recall, we have a limited entry hunt, and then we have a general season over-the-counter hunt. The over-the-counter permits go on sale February 3rd, it looks like. So they've been plentiful, and in fact, we haven't sold nearly all of them in the past, so I suspect that they'll be there if you don't dry out. But if you want to go early in April, you need to apply soon. The dedicated hunters, if you recall, are changed to go to 30 units. One of the aspects of that is that the dedicated hunters that are currently in the system need to choose the unit that they're going to hunt before we actually perform the drawing. And they will be asked, they were supposed to have started today to have the ability to do that. We're being told now that due to some technical difficulties that it'll be Friday that they'll be able to start doing that. For the existing participants in the system, there's no limit as to the percentage, although when it comes to the drawing for new applicants, if the 15% of the permits percentage has been exceeded by existing dedicated hunters, then there will be none available for new dedicated hunters. We anticipate that the existing dedicated hunters will spread themselves across the units, and that won't be a problem, but it's a potential that it could be. If you recall, we limited the 15% of the available permits to dedicated hunters in general. Because this is our first time into this system, the existing dedicated hunters will have to choose which units they want to spend the rest of their term on. New dedicated hunters will draw into the units where permits are available, and they will have to hunt that unit for the next 3 years. So that process should begin on Friday. Dedicated hunters will be notified of the need to do that. I suspect if they don't choose a unit, that they'll be limited to those that are available after everybody else. So it's important that they do that, and that's why we're announcing it now. Big game application period begins February 1st. Over the past few years, we've had it sometimes in January, but most recently in February. So we're still a ways out, but February 1st is when the big game application period starts. Fishing guidebooks for 2012 will come out towards the end of this month. We're usually delivering them with our Christmas presents. So in any event, it's usually about Christmas. So our biologists are nearing the end of their classification. What I'm hearing from them in general is lots of fawns and a pretty good looking postseason buck crop. So that's good news for all of us. And our color survival studies are showing good survival on fawns over last winter and through this summer, and also good survival on adults. So things are looking up in terms of deer production, and that's just what we need for our deer to come back. So if there's any questions, Mr. Chairman, that's what I have.
Thanks, Doug. Any questions? Sure, Sam.
I know last year Doug, we met over there in Cedar City and went and looked at the situation over there at Ward's Parallel, the winter range.
Uh-huh.
They did have doe hunts this year, is that true?
They're in progress now.
Okay, and is that looking any better, or where are we at on that?
Well, it depends on the winter, Sam. What happens, we're having kind of a light winter so far in terms of snow depth. The temperatures have turned off cold, which can affect them, but snow depth, you know, probably hasn't pushed them down to the extent that it did last year at this time, if you remember how much deeper the snow was then. So it's difficult to say at this point. What I can tell you is that taking some pressure off that range can't help but help, if that makes sense. And we'll monitor that situation over the winter, and we'll come with recommendations. We're doing bucks and bulls and antlerless elk at the same meeting this year. So we'll come with recommendations for doe permits or not in the future there, depending on how it looks. We had a real good precipitation last year in terms of the habitat, and production of forage should be up this year, which is what that needed, as you saw. And but it's not going to be solved in 1 year or probably even five. And it's going to take a long time of caring for that range and some good luck in terms of weather in order for it to recover. So.
Thanks. Any more questions? Seeing none, let the record show Claire Woodbury joined us at large from Washington County. Let's proceed into the meat of the agenda. Bear recommendations for 2012. John Shivick, Game Animals Coordinator. Welcome, John.
Thank you. Good evening. So we'll go ahead and start right on into it. We've got a few things to discuss and a few things to look at. First off is that we're starting the new bear management plan that was approved last January. So I'd want to give a little bit of background as to how we came up with the recommendations that we came up with and just refresh everybody's memory on this. Basically, the gist of the plan is that it's trying to balance the need to reduce human-bear conflicts while maximizing recreational opportunities and at the same time protecting and ensuring our bear populations. As far as for applying the plan, biological background, the way the plan and the way we monitor populations has a lot to do with percentages of females, percentages of males that are harvested. Now, females and males have differential susceptibility to harvest, and in an area where the animals are being harvested liberally, there's a high proportion of females that are taken. In an area where there's a light harvest due to differential susceptibility, you'll see more adult males percentage-wise. And then we can use these ratios to assess where we are in terms of our harvest and the intensity of our harvest and adjust our permits. So that's essentially how the plan works. And you'll see some of these numbers as we go through it. So in terms of the management system, and it's a stepwise process, the first thing that happens or has happened is the regions have selected the harvest strategy that they want at the unit level. The plan has a rule that we have to follow, which is to divide the hunt units throughout the state into the three different categories in certain proportions. So light needs to be less than 25% of the units, moderate type or moderate strategy greater than 50%, and liberal less than 25%. So as it turns out, out of the 23 units that we have, the majority of the units are going to fall in that moderate or light category. The way we choose what if it's going to be light, moderate, or liberal has a lot to do with, again, we're talking about balancing the human-bear conflict and then population needs. So an area where we have very little conflicts, where we want to have a lot of our opportunity for, say, sows or something, or acts as a source population for other units, that's going to be categorized as a light. Moderate will have moderate levels of human-wildlife conflicts and a stable bear population, whereas liberal units where it looks like the bear population is increasing and there's a lot of conflicts with humans. Okay, so after we've decided which strategy we're following, then we make our permit recommendations based on the last 3 years of data that we have on the populations. We look at our harvest results, the three-year average of it, in relation to performance of what the harvest strategies say that we're supposed to have. And by that, I mean these, the light, moderate, and liberal. I talked about those percentages before. And the harvest of adult males over the 5 years old, for instance, in a light, we want to see greater than 35%, and the females less than 30%. So we can go through these categories and see where our harvests fall out and adjust as we need. So a little more detail on that. We looked the last 3 years, and for instance, if a category is, if a unit is in a moderate category, and as you can see, we want the males over 5 years between 25 and 35%, and the females between 30 and 40%. If we say have fewer females, harvest less than 30% females, thank you, Jim, we'll end up, if the females fall below it and the males are right in it, it kicks in a series how we adjust our permits based on how those different things fall in. For example, as I gave, if the females were down, then you have one in, one out, we'd adjust the permits probably up by somewhere between 0 and 20%. So it gives us a set of rules of how to adjust permits. After we've adjusted our permits, we can also use a bear population density study where we can see what our three-year growth rate is during that time, and that's using genetics. And it's used as supplemental information. Many people may have heard of our hare snare and genetic analysis studies where we can establish a growth rate in the different regions. And if our growth rate is within the desired range, we don't adjust the permits. But if it falls out of the desired ranges, we'll adjust the permits up or down according to, again, the dictates of the plan. In general, we're only good to about plus or minus 10%. So if we don't see anything more than plus or minus 10% in terms of growth rate, we're not going to adjust permits based on that. So after we've statewide adjustment using the population analysis, we also have a bear recruitment study going on in order to monitor populations that way. Now, again, these are supplemental observations. This is also a work in progress. Our plan's new. We don't even have our 3 years of data on this yet, we don't have the numbers. But as you see, as this plan comes through, if we get a recruitment pulse, which is bears will have good years, and they'll produce young, and they'll come through, and then they'll have other years that aren't as good. And if we have no pulses, or within 5 years we have really good recruitment, we might adjust the permits down throughout the state. And if we have two pulses within 5 years, and it looks like the population's growing, we might adjust the permits up. Additional techniques that the plan calls for, one is extended spring seasons. Again, so if we have areas where we have nuisance complaints, we have the ability to extend our spring season and work on wandering bears that way a little bit more. The other thing the plan calls for, this is the harvest objective approaches, and the plan actually calls for us to establish this year three different types of quotas, a standard, a split, and a female subquota on three different units within a state. So we had to set that up. And then the idea is to test these and see how well they work through the next series. Another additional technique the plan calls for us to investigate is to look into spot and stalk hunts. The idea is to provide additional hunting opportunity, any weapon, no hounds, and to get more people out there to have the opportunity to harvest a bear. So actually putting the plan in place, we'll go over, I've summarized a lot in order to get the information to you, and you have more detail unit by unit in your packets. Statewide, the way the distribution rolled up, in terms of light, we fell into 13% of our units are in light, 65% are in moderate, and 22% are in liberal categories. So again, 78% or so of our units are in that moderate to light in terms of harvest objectives. The three-year summary, looking at our last 3 years, the number of we're just looking at limited entry permits right here, but it gives us an idea of kind of where we are and where we're going. Those are the numbers, 338 to 366, 442. But when we roll this up, when we roll this up in terms of harvest ratios, over the last 3 years, our proportions of adult males fell into the moderate category, and the proportion of adult females right on the edge of that moderate to light. So it looks like statewide, the way we've been harvesting bears is in a light to moderate framework. That's what we've been doing. population growth rate. Both of the, we have two units where we're able to get good enough information to get an estimate, and they both fell within that plus or minus 10%, so there wasn't any, we're not going to need to make any adjustments based on that. In terms of denning, those studies are continuing, like I hinted at before. We don't have enough information on this to make any adjustments quite yet, but we'll keep that going and get the numbers up there. So overall, according to the plan, the way we followed through things, we calculated our permits, went through those steps, as I said, and in 2012, we're going to end up with, in terms of limited entry permits, 494 being recommended, which is an increase of about 11% from 2011. 12 of the units will have extended spring seasons on them. 3 units will have quotas on them. 2 new limited entry spot and stock units, and all the units are open for summer training. This is something else that came up, and we'll talk a little bit more about too. But we're keeping them all open for summer training, but we're going to look into something on LaSalle and San Juan in a little more detail, and I'll talk about that. Just to give you what a typical unit in a season looks like, Manti South, our spring limited entries, most of our units are going to look a lot like this, April 7th, May 29th, and the fall limited entry is in August and early, and then that late November one as well. And we divide our permits up, total permits in each of the seasons, conservation permits, and then premium permits. You'll notice here, and then also in your handouts, that we didn't pull out the out-of-state. It's all combined for that, but we can just pull out the proportional amount of out-of-state out of that. These are totals. So the extended spring seasons out of those units, 2 of them in the northern region, 4 in the northeast, central region 3, southern region 2, so they're divided up fairly equally around the state. Harvest objective units, our standard quota system, the Wasatch, Finquin, spring, April 7th, June 3rd. We've got a female subquota proposed on the beaver in the fall, and then a split unit on the 9 mile where we combine, again, our harvest objective with a limited entry where they're split. Okay. Spot and stock units. This is something that the plan called for us to do, and we found a couple places where we can incorporate these as well. So LaSalle and San Juan look identical. We've got our spring limited entry, the fall limited entry, and then adding in October a limited entry spot in stock where we have 30 permits added in there to increase opportunity and to test out and see how well that's going to work in terms of harvesting. Now, something else that really came out during the development of these recommendations this year were some of the trends that the biologists saw in the Sal and San Juans especially. That is, before the summer pursuit seasons were going on down there, they saw a very limited number of bear incidents and conflicts, averaging about 2 per year. Then when they started summer pursuit on those 2 units, the incidents with conflicts jumped up to about 10 per year, which got people scratching their head and thinking about it a little bit and wondering if we need to look into this in a little more detail. If we look at it graphically, if you increase the number of permits, you increase the number of bears that show up in town and cause conflicts. So this is something we want to pay attention to, but don't want to jump to conclusions with either and make drastic recommendations or drastic changes. So it got us thinking that we want to look at this in a little more detail, and that's the reason we're recommending this next issue in there. In terms of summer pursuit in LaSalle and San Juans, there'll be a 60% reduction of the pursuit on one unit, no reduction on the other, and then we'll alternate the units that are being reduced. This is scientifically, it's just called a crossover design where we can compare the two and tease out to see if does reducing the number of permits reduce the number of nuisance bears. So on the summer pursuit permits, the way it looks like this is LaSalle's will go down to 5 the first year. San Juan stays the same. The second year, LaSalle's are the same, but San Juan goes down by 60%, and then 2014, it goes the same thing but within season. So the early La Salle's high and then goes low, and then the San Juan's high and are low and then goes high. And we'll be able to use these results to evaluate in 2014 and incorporate them into the next recommendation cycle. Remember, we're doing a three-year recommendation now. So to summarize where the seasons and dates come out, the spring hunts and the pursuit are going to be April 7th, May 29th, and then the extended just adds an extra couple days, bumps it into June 3rd. The fall limited entry hunts in general, that August 25th, September 30th, except the San Juan and La Salle, we've bumped a little earlier in order to try to minimize consumer hunter conflict. Spot and stock hunts, again, as you saw, La Salle and San Juan, October 6th, 29th. And then the summer pursuit seasons will stay more or less as they had been on the other units. And those are our recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Questions from the rack? From the presentation?
Sure. I have a couple questions, John. This summer pursuit down on San Juan and La Salle, do you take into consideration the food source, or are all we looking at is the houndsmen that are there in summer training? You know, sometimes we've had bear in town before there was a summer pursuit, so I think we need to expand that, don't you?
Yeah, that's exactly. We've had all these discussions quite intensely within the ranks, and where you can point out years, yes, where we had good years, then we still saw bears in town. And again, coming from my perspective, looking at it, again, we've got a correlation here through time, and that's why I thought it was very good to not go all the way and get rid of all the permits or do anything drastic and add more or whatever. I think the approach is a really sound one to get a look at it, and this approach allows us to experiment and say, okay, does reducing permits actually reduce it? And because other factors are really important. There is food, there is weather, there are other, you know, the number of other people up in the forest as well, too, that could be influencing things. But by taking this approach, we'll be able to say, okay, does our action help or not help? And then in 2014, we'll be able to say, okay, we know what works and what doesn't.
Okay. The other question I had was on closing those two units early, and I guess it was to minimize the conflict between the elk and the bear hunters, right?
Exactly.
Is there a record kept on the number of actual conflicts? I've talked to a couple of bear hunters. Of course, the archery hunters wouldn't have any conflict, would they? And so, and they have never experienced a conflict, and that's why I wondered, do we actually keep a record of that? Or are we just kind of dreaming this up?
I've got sort of the lumps in the emails and the phone calls to indicate the depth of passion over concerns over this thing. Again, my thought on it is that we're all out there, and we all want to share the mountain as best we can. But at the same time, people are waiting 14 years or so to get up in there, and we want to be able to respect that as well. So it really is a balancing act, and we're doing the best as we can to keep everybody happy, but not close off opportunity to any one group.
Well, I see that, but we have a lot of other elk units that open the same time, but yet we're not reducing the bear dates in those other units, and there's some that are hard to draw elk units too.
Right.
And I just don't see the conflict there, and that's why I was asking the question.
A lot of it comes from the regions, and I have to admit the La Salle and San Juan are kind of unique units statewide, and again we're balancing everything statewide.
If I can add to that, John, I've got a little bit of information and familiarity with the La Salle's and Elk Ridge, and it's a fairly limited area. I think that's part of the problem. And the answer to your question is that there's probably really no way to gauge exactly how much conflict there is other than by the number of complaints that we get by one method or another. I don't know if you survey the elk hunters to find out how much conflict there is, or you survey the bear hunters to find out how much conflict there is. Yeah, or
the
just
bear hunters.
Yeah.
There was no
The elk hunters didn't interfere with them.
Yeah, the elk hunters probably don't interfere too much with the bear hunters, although that would be an interesting complaint. But, you know, I think a lot of elk hunters that are interfered with probably don't complain, and I'm not sure that we've come up with a good way to gauge that. The one thing we can tell you is that in terms of the number of complaints that we get, that it seems to be high in those two areas. And I think it's because of the limited availability of summer range that they're sharing at the time that these things are going on. And so particularly the San Juan is a huge unit, a lot of this activity is restricted to a pretty small area. So I'm not sure exactly how we would count the number of complaints, to tell you the truth. I mean, we could keep track of emails and letters and those sorts of things. But I'm not sure that's a good way to gauge it, except maybe on a really big scale and say we certainly have more complaints there than we do others. Would that be a fair characterization of how we go about that, John?
Exactly.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A follow-up question to that that I have about, I'll talk all night about La Salle and San Juan, but you mentioned bears in town. Was there discussion about bears and conflicts and dispersed campsites on the forest, on the Blues, or La Salle's or San Juan, Elk Ridge, end of things?
Well, what was driving this particular aspect of it was the bears in town. Any kind of nuisance complaints is what drives into our extended springs and some of those kinds of things. But in terms of the detail that we're looking, the town thing is what people scratching their head. Campgrounds and things, that seems, kind of par. But when people really started worrying that the amount of pursuit was mixing the bears up and driving them down for them essentially looking for a place to rest, ironically enough, that's the hypothesis. So most of the discussion really has been about that issue. And all I can say, we'll see.
We've seen, I don't know about a strong correlation or not, maybe just coincidence in summer training seasons and reduced conflicts in dispersed camping areas.
Well, exactly. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
It's confounding now.
Yeah. No, but you're exactly right. Some of the units that very much like the summer pursuit as a way, it does move bears. So that kind of argues kind of for and against the whole concept in the sense that we can use it to move bears out of these campgrounds and things, but it depends where they go.
Sure.
So that's an excellent point. Thank you.
Other questions from the right? Lane.
Just a question that was brought up by some of the sportsmen that I talked to. On the harvest objective tags that are proposed, is there going to be the same, and I don't know how you'll regulate this, but will there be the same waiting period on a harvest objective tag as you have on a limited entry tag?
I would assume, I was trying to think about this, we've actually discussed it, we're going to keep everything as simple as we can and as standardized as we can. So I assume we'll do it the same way.
No, because I mean, right now the harvest objective tag on the cougar, you can buy a tag this year, kill a cougar this year, and then buy another harvest objective tag next year.
Right.
But on a bear, you can, if you kill a bear now on a limited entry, you got a 3-year waiting period. So I mean, if a guy doesn't kill, if he buys a harvest objective tag on a bear unit, he does not kill, will he be able to buy a harvest objective tag the next year?
Yeah.
Maybe yeah. Things we want to capture in emotion. We'll make note of
yeah.
that. Same goals for bonus points.
Yeah.
You lose your bonus points when you go in and buy a over-the-counter harvest objective tag.
The concept is the same as limited entry big game tags versus general season tags. Does anyone know for certain if there's a waiting period on harvest objectives from the division?
Not online.
Yeah, it's online. It's an over-the-counter tag, essentially. So there's no waiting period because there's no application period. Does that make sense? You can just go buy it. So if you don't draw out, you can go buy a harvest objective. It's set up exactly the same way that cougars are now. Does that help?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that would answer their question because they were concerned that, well, if I don't draw a limited entry tag and I go buy a harvest objective tag and I kill a bear, then I, do I have to wait 3 years before I can kill another bear? Yeah. Or go before I can even buy another tag?
I think the process is set up exactly the same as it was with cougars. The objectives are a little bit different in terms of when we shut it down. But,
and that's how I thought it should be.
But, yeah, that, I think the harvest objective concept is, as proposed, is the same as what there is with cougars.
As with cougars.
Exactly. Okay. Same way, for instance, like with the split harvest is modeled after our cougar. So, again, it's the idea is to, as complicated and as many facets are to this plan as there are, it's still the idea is to try to standardize it as much as possible as some of these other things we're doing.
More quick.
I have one more. On the spot and stock hunts that we've had so far on the book cliffs, if my memory serves me right, that's the only area we've had a spot and stock hunt, correct? I mean,
specifically spot and stock that I'm aware of, yeah.
I mean, that's the only unit we have right now that is spot and stock. No hounds.
Okay, go on.
Has there been a higher percentage of females killed on that spot and stock hunt versus the hunts we use that we hunt with hounds or bait?
Oh, I clearly don't. I don't have those data in front of me. I can't give you that off the top of my head.
Okay.
I definitely have to look that up.
Steve,
go ahead, Mike.
I had the same question on those spot and stock. 30 for 3 years, that's 90 tags on both. That's 180 tags right close together. That seemed like a lot of permits, and I can understand, but there's no mechanism that I can see that if the female harvest goes way up, nothing's going to change. You're still going to give those 90 tags, you know, and it looks like to me there ought to be a mechanism, or is there a mechanism? That's my question. Is there a mechanism in place so that we can monitor this, and if that goes skiwampus, you know, we can shut it down?
Right. Yes, there is a mechanism in terms of the plan. It's just it's on that three-year scale. And one of the things we're really counting on, we're really expecting, based on what we're seeing in some of the other states, we're not really expecting a high... You're expecting a pretty low take in terms of the spot and stock. You can see the 30, but we're expecting, you know, 3-4, something like that. So the mechanism has to do is at the end of the cycle, all of these things, all of these quotas, everything that we're showing up here, the idea is to do this for this first cycle, look at those numbers, and then that's when we'll make our recommendation. As you had brought up before, a lot of these other things in terms of winter, in terms of seasons, how early the spring, you know, how early they come down, how early they go back in. So any 1 year, I think, is an important piece of information. One thing that's good about this plan, it gives us a 3-year window where we can have a pretty darn good estimate in order to make the next series of recommendations on it. So, yes, it's within the plan, but it's on a 3-year basis.
Don't you think that the females with cubs are more susceptible, though, to spot and stalk? Because a lot of times you won't see those cubs. I mean, it's going to be you're going to take a bear at an opportunity, so to speak. You know, it's not like you can't catch and release, so to speak, or even a bow hunter. He watches that bear when it comes. He's close.
Right.
But we might be shooting bears with spot and stalk at 500 yards, and you're not going to see those cubs.
We're still going to expect people to pay attention with sows and cubs. From that perspective, and we'll watch that. We put in the plan, or was put in the plan and approved that way, and those discussions were had. So when it came down to it, I think we're thinking, you know, there's that kind of, always that kind of risk, but not a game changer.
That's another question I had. You say they have a bear committee, right? That helps formulate this bear management plan?
Well, yes, that committee was formed before I started working here.
Well, I know
and,
that.
And they went through the plan, went through the whole process. That thing was approved January 24th, I think, of this year. They put that together, and now there's not the committee anymore. Now we're implementing the plan.
The guys that I talked to on the committee didn't see these 90 spot and stock tags, early closings, things like that. So that's what I, you know,
the committee didn't know that this was going to take place, so this is the first time we've seen this.
Right, and that's where it's important on this plan to, you know, again, these details, I acknowledge that. We're making the recommendations based on the information we have, based on the plan, based on the numbers that we had, and we're putting it in place, and we'll do our first 3 years, and then we're ready to, we'll get the data and then change as we need to.
Thank you.
To answer your question, too, Mike, I can, based on several years of experience here, you know, we've passed a lot of three-year proclamations. If something develops that becomes a threat to the resource, something unexpected becomes a threat to the resource, we often come back. I think one of the only ones I've seen go all 3 years is the Upland game, where there's not a presentation in between. And there have been several others that have been proposed, but we'll take care of the resource if there's a problem. And others will probably have the opportunity to express their opinion if they believe there's a problem based on the harvest. I think there's very little chance that we're going to say, sorry, we're not adjusting our recommendations when it's clear that there's something that exceeds our objectives, for example, in the plan. So we'll stick to the plan is what it boils down to.
Yeah, if I can add to that, the idea is we need to not be capricious about it either. There are safety valves, there are ways to change things mid-course, but we don't want to do that just based on any kind of whims. We want to be serious about it and follow up on what we established.
Thanks. Additional questions?
Was one more question.
Go ahead, Mike.
The other harvest objectives, we got beaver, erythral 9 mile, right, or erythral and 9 mile.
Mm-hmm.
Are there dogs involved in any of those?
In the harvest, in the other
harvest
objectives,
units, yeah.
If we have dogs involved in them.
There are,
yeah. Any weapon, anything, the only thing you can't do is bait on those.
Not on the beaver,
dogs, you need dogs.
Not on the beaver.
No dogs involved on the
beaver.
Nor
baiting.
Right.
Other questions, Sam?
This is more on curiosity than anything you've really presented, but what impact, if any, do bears have on the mule deer population as a predator?
In terms of what I think what the state's usually looking at is cougars for adults and coyotes for fawns, and not as concerned about bears on the mule deer population relative to those other species.
So there's no considerations at all involved in
not in this plan, no.
Other questions, Dale?
I've got an email here from a group of several individuals that have signed up, but they're pretty much in support of the fall harvest objective on the beaver, but one thing they would like to see is that the conservation tag holder be able to hunt all three seasons on that. Is that something that would be possible, or is that going to cause some problems?
We've got the conservation tag set up to do the limited entry as a normal conservation tag would do. If you guys want to, propose differences, that's up to you, but the idea was to do those as limited entry permit types.
So, but they could hunt out, they can only hunt the spring and fall season?
The limited entry, yeah.
And they couldn't hunt the harvest objective season then?
That's the idea.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure, Rusty.
This is along the line of Sam's question, but with livestock, is there conflicts with livestock and bear?
Yes, there are, and some of those spring seasons, extended seasons, have to do with those kinds of complaints.
Triggers, one of your strategies for the liberal for human bear conflict, can we put a livestock conflict in there as well?
Yes, livestock is in there. It does say livestock. One of the things in the plan, too, if Wildlife Services take is more higher than harvest, that's also a trigger. So that is a concern, yes.
Brian.
Seems like you've answered my beaver questions that I had throughout the process here, but looking at this in the Wasatch Mountain Current Creek of Inniquin area. It's harvest objective in the spring. Any weapons, hounds, and no bait. Just was wondering what the logic was there of not having bait in there, or maybe even a split season of sorts and allowing just a small number of people in there with bait so the Forest Service doesn't get overran, or just what's the logic behind that, and then maybe we can discuss it.
Right. That'd be good. Again, the logic is in terms of one, that being the spring harvest objective, one of the things we're expecting, there might be a large number of people in there, a large number of hounds in there. So in terms of presenting conflicts between the different groups, one thing that could happen is that hounds could end up running off a bait a lot more frequently than we'd want if you mix those two up together that way. And the other half of it is if someone's got up, set up a bait station, and then people come through with hounds and take their bear, that's another potential for conflict. So in this first round of it, we thought it'd be the simplest and best approach is to handle it exclusively this way. So the bowmen can still get out, but just not use the bait and simplify things that way.
So we're just basically catering on this unit to houndsmen then?
We're not trying to cater to anybody.
No, sounds like me.
We want the best experience for everybody, but we also had to have this harvest objective. We had to have it somewhere in the state, mm-hmm. and we had to balance it among the different groups that are using it and try to get the best experience. And this is our first time at it. We need to look at it and really see how it's going to play out. Not set ourselves up for a lot of angry people out there. So that's the idea.
I commend the division on thinking outside the box. I think this is great as far as opportunity goes. Careful how I ask. If there was, say, a split season or a split harvest objective, we just reduced that down out of those 10 bears, and then they did something like 3 archery tags, those guys that put in for it would know full well that they could be overrun with hounds. But anyways, I'm just asking questions. And so my question is, if it's only 3 or 4 guys, they would know full well that they could get overrun with hounds. I don't see that. Do you see that much of a in that scenario, that much of a area of conflict if there's only a handful of bow hunters with bait?
Right. And in that sense, then there's the argument, well, there's not really that many bow hunters out there. So if there's only a few guys, then the idea is we're not reducing that much opportunity by not having bait out there. So in terms of the degree of conflict and simplicity of it, it makes it simpler if there's no bait out there. And if there's only a few people that aren't on the unit, then that's not like we're denying a bunch to a bunch of people. If that makes sense, if you follow me on that one.
I'm following you, yes, but there's not that many bear baits on any of the units in the state. So it's not like
Let's keep it to questions.
Sorry.
And
you're absolutely right.
We'll move this debate and see what public comment we have. Any other questions from the rack? Seeing none, how about questions from the public? We'll hold these to questions. We'll move to comments after this if you have questions. Come up to the mic and give us your name if you would, sir.
I'm Carl Shakespeare. I'm a hound hunter. One of the questions I have, and maybe it's here, but I'm just not finding it. Summer pursuit, will that remain basically unchanged except in those limited entry summer pursuit units? The Boulder is the area that I'm most concerned about. Summer pursuit will still remain the same as it has
exactly
been.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Other question?
John Keeler, Utah Farm Bureau. How many bear were taken by wildlife services or individuals that had livestock conflicts?
Harvest question. You're going to make them dig through their charts and tables, John.
I know. We'll have to dig.
You asking 2011? Yet sometimes in that presentation on the statewide harvest, let's give them time to look it up, and we may have to get that to you. Other questions from the audience? Braden? Sorry, Braden, we've got an answer.
John, for depredation, we've got it clumped with other mortality. For 2011, it was 29. It's down quite a bit over the last couple of years. 2009, and again, these are depredation and other combined, but 2009, it was 63, 2010, 58, and then 2011, it was down to 29.
Thanks.
My question relates to mule deer. I know in the state right now, mule deer is probably one of, oh, Braden Richmond. Sorry, Steve already got my name. mule deer is one of the biggest concerns in the state right now. And so the question that Sam kind of alluded to, I have the same question. I know in historical studies we've done, we found that bears have a large impact on some units on fawns. So I'm just curious why this wasn't included as part of the what we were looking at and setting the objectives.
Anise Audi, Big Game Coordinator. We actually presented all this, I guess it's been a year, a little more than a year ago now, on what effects bears have on mule deer. And actually all the studies show, both in the state and outside the state, that it's a minimal effect on mule deer fawns. They do eat some, but the studies have shown that they can have an effect on calves, on elk calves, more than mule deer fawns, just because calves are more concentrated where they drop, and fawns are more dispersed. So, yeah, they'll eat every fawn they find, but they don't find very many.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, let's move on into comment portion. Braden Richmond. You're still close to the mic. Two cards from you.
Yeah, I have one representing Beaver SFW and then another one for Yuba. You want me to do them both at the same time?
Yeah, you get both hats?
I can wear both hats, I think. Beaver SFW committee, we just want to support the division on the harvest objective here on the Beaver. We think it's a real good opportunity to provide more opportunity with minimal impact to the resource. We're pretty excited about that. We do have a couple concerns. Like I stated a second ago, we're really concerned about our mule deer population. We think this is probably the biggest, scariest issue we're dealing with in the state. We can't figure them out. We can't figure out why they continue to decline. We'd like to see more bear. We're nervous that we're increasing bear populations while mule deer populations are dwindling. And so we'd like to see more bear tags. We don't want to eradicate bears. We want to preserve the resource, but we'd like to not see growth. And then finally, we'd like to increase the time on the spring bear hunts. This year, to our knowledge, there's only one successful bear harvested on the spring bear hunt in Beaver. We could be wrong on that, but you really only have the last week and a half of the season to hunt. We'd like to see that go into the second week of June. That's from the Beaver SFW committee. Now switching hats to Yuba. I brought a letter that I was asked to present for Utah Bow Hunters Association dealing with the... Well, let me just read it. I won't read the whole thing. I'll spare you parts of it, and then I'll hand out the letter. But it says, the Utah Bowman's Association supports the DWR's efforts to provide an increased opportunity to hunt bears via harvest objective hunts. However, the current recommendation inadvertently eliminates an existing opportunity to hunt bear over bait on the Wasatch Mountains, Current Creek, Abiquaquin Unit. Therefore, we recommend implementing a spring limited entry archery only hunt to the Wasatch Mountains Current Creek unit in addition to the spring harvest objective hunt. The purpose of this recommendation is to continue to offer the opportunity to hunt over bait on the unit during the spring hunt. We recommend this hunt run concurrently with the DWR recommended harvest objective hunts. On all spring hunts in the state, there are archery and hounds currently. We are currently hunting with hounds on archery hunts. This is nothing new. Well, we're just wondering why we're decreasing opportunity. Thank you. Do you want me to bring these up?
Thank you. Yeah, that'd be great. Give one to Lenny and get it in a minute.
Sorry, I didn't print enough for everyone.
Alan, Raleigh. followed by Amy Barker.
Good evening, Alan Raleigh, Forest Supervisor here on the Fish Lake National Forest. Just wanted to say we're supportive of the increased harvest levels proposed on the Beaver Unit to help reduce human-bear conflicts up on the mountain. That works well for us. To add to that, we have enough concern about those potential conflicts that we're thinking about some kind of requirement for food storage, people food storage in campgrounds to reduce conflicts as well. Just wanted to share that with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Amy Barker, District Ranger on the Beaver Ranger District. And I'd just like to reiterate what Alan said. We're in support of this proposed changes. And we also would just like to say we appreciate the cooperation of the division this past summer handling some of the nuisance bear problems. So thank you.
Thank you. John Keeler, followed by Carl Shakespeare. It's the last card I have.
John Keeler, Utah Farm Bureau. I just asked Teresa about the total numbers that they're recommending, which wasn't in the information, 494, and the Farm Bureau supports that recommendation.
Thank you, John.
Carl Shakespeare, Houndsman. One of the concerns I have, and I'm focused in pretty much on the unit that I hunt most, which is the Boulder unit. To my knowledge, they haven't had many conflicts the last few years, and I'm a little concerned about the number of permits being issued. It's 40 now. Hunter success, if I recall right, looking at the management plan, hunter success is low. It seems conflicts are low. It seemed like permits keep going up. My observation, I feel like the population's declining. I really think we need to do something about the number of bears that we're killing or that aren't there that should be on the Boulder unit. I think the population there is gradually declining. I've been hunting them for nearly 15 years now. And I'm just a little concerned about if that population is being monitored, what the population studies seem to be indicating. I would be interested in knowing how many collared females they have there and what those trends seem to be indicating. I did applaud one of the things in the management plan that suggested perhaps collaring a number of females on each unit so that their, you know, reproduction can be monitored, and also that those collared females could be off limits to hunters. Because I really have a concern with the number of females that are taken, especially on areas where the bear populations are low. I have no problems taking females on units where the bear population is high and maybe causing conflicts. But on a unit where the population seems to be declining and conflicts aren't there, I think we need to protect those reproducing females. One of the concerns that I would have if I were a spot and stalk hunter, is there any way to protect them from the scenario of they go buy their tag over the counter and the next day the quota is reached and they're out of luck? There's no bears to hunt the rest of the year. They've bought a tag and haven't had an opportunity to fill that tag. That would be a concern if I was a spot and stalk hunter. I see also that on the Beaver unit in particular, that's another unit I'm a little concerned, but if they make the November hunt spot and stalk, that does eliminate some of the opportunity for the hound hunters. It takes 1 month that they typically have had for hound hunting. And I'm wondering if that could be mitigated somewhat by extending the spring season. Not necessarily, in my opinion, really, I'm a catch and release bear hunter. I don't care if I kill a bear, but I like to work my dogs. And I would think the hunters on the Beaver unit would like to have that opportunity, any opportunity that could could help give them more opportunity to run their dogs, maybe extending the spring hunters or maybe giving them a little longer summer pursuit season or something like that to mitigate that situation where they're losing that November hunt. I thank you for the opportunity of speaking.
Thank you, Carl. Good point. Teresa, does anybody in the region want to talk a little about the boulder and number of callers, or if any biologists here? I don't mean to put you on the spot.
Our biologist for the boulder is absent tonight. He's very sick. He's actually got meningitis, and
supposed
to be laying in bed for the rest of the month. But we currently have four callers out on females on the boulder. So we'll be monitoring those bears over the next several years. All the criteria seems to be in line on the boulder. I can talk to Mr. Shakespeare individually on that. The average age of harvest for 2010, which is the most recent that we've got the teeth back, is 6.7. And this last year, we killed just 29% female. So I can go into more depth with him on that.
Oh, that's perfect. Thank you. Any color females been harvested there since you've done that study the last few years?
No? I don't think so.
We have no mortality.
Okay. Thank you. That's all the Carmen cards I have. To paraphrase, mostly support.
I'd like to
watch what we do. Go ahead, Mike.
I'd like to make some motions on a few of these specific things. We talked about it a little bit before, Steve, and I think this is the proper time to do that.
Yeah, if there's a motion you want to tease out, if we want to discuss something up here, see what kind of support there is on the rack to make some of these changes.
You know, we've had some good suggestions from the audience, and I think some of them deserve, and in fact, all of them do. I wanted to make a motion and discuss about extending the spring hunt. There's a lot of years, like Mr. Shakespeare said, that you may only have a week and a half because of the number of the depth of the snow and everything. And I know a lot of guys last year that turned their tags back in because there was no opportunity there. And I think that I'd like to make a motion then that we extend that spring hunt. And I would be acceptable to looking at the weather conditions and making this as on demand. But I'd like to make a motion that we could extend that spring bear hunt 2 weeks into the second week in June.
Can I ask you to get it more specific? Is that statewide? Is that in the region? Is that by a unit? What do you have in mind?
On the extended season.
I would think on any unit that had the extended season. We extended the season by 2 to 3 days is all, right?
Well, five days.
5 days, yeah.
So motion on the table to extend the seasons in the southern, on statewide, on extended season units.
On extended season units.
To mid-June?
Thanks.
Can we discuss the motion?
Motion on the table. Does anybody second that motion?
I second.
Seconded by Lane. Now we can discuss that motion.
Perfect. I think that we ought to, I'm just throwing this out there, I would like to see us do the 2 weeks on all the ones that are already extended and then extend all the rest of them a week. I mean, the same conditions apply. I mean, even these units that aren't problem units, these guys put in for these tags and they may not have, I mean, that extra 7 days is golden in June. It's a big deal if you're hunting bears. I've had the opportunity in this state to hunt bears, and it's a wonderful opportunity, and it's those last couple days are really where it's the best. If we could extend, you know, like you said, the ones that are already extended 2 weeks and then the rest of the state 7 days, I think that could be extremely beneficial for sportsmen. And we've already got safety valves in place to change that. If we start harvesting too many females, if we start doing this, I mean, Doug's already mentioned that we're not going to do something that hurts the resource, and we're already trying a lot of new stuff this year, so I'm just throwing that out there.
Other discussion? Claire.
I just have a question. Maybe somebody from the division can answer. Why do we end it on the end of May or the first part of June? Is there a reason?
A couple of years ago, we had, I believe it was Jordan Pedersen that came and gave a presentation on bear management. And if you're familiar with recent history, recent being within the last 10 years, the spring bear hunt was outlawed for several years, and it's only recently been brought back, and it was brought back very cautiously with some very important safeguards. Some of the work that we've, the published studies that have been done, and analysis of our harvest data indicates that males come out early in the spring. And at some point when the females start emerging, if you run the hunt into that time frame, your female harvest goes way up. And we're right on the brink of that. The 2 weeks that we're talking about could be critical for the amount of female harvest that we may incur as a result of that. We can't guess the weather. We may have a real dry open spring next year, and it may all be over by the 1st of June. We've had some snowed in winters the last couple of years, and I understand that's where it's coming from, but on average, the dates that we've set and the time frames that have been established for ending these hunts is primarily for that reason. The concern is that as the females begin emerging from the den, that we will substantially increase harvest of females. So that's the biological reason for ending the hunts when we do. It's not got to do with trying to limit hunters or limit their opportunity, but there's a real significant issue with extending the season. Those units that have extended seasons now are extended with the thought that when it was the idea was originally come up with was those units had high depredation loss for livestock. And so the idea was that we did want to reduce bear populations on those units. And so we're using that tool for that reason. But to do it statewide, or to do it on every unit, could impact those objectives that we've listed in the plan pretty heavily, and the female harvest could go up significantly, and away we go. We're making lots of changes this year, and it's an innovative new plan, and obviously we're implementing several different things. It can get a little confusing, and everybody wants their little piece of the pie, I understand. What I would ask is that we let enough new stuff go through that we have a chance to evaluate it before we go too much further. That's the other thing that may happen by extending seasons is we may complicate our ability to analyze what we've done in the past with known season dates. It changes the dynamic there.
Thanks, Doug. More discussion? Claire?
Yeah, thanks, Doug. That answers my question. And looking at it in that vein, I don't think I could support that motion.
Steve, and looking at sure, that motion, I would withdraw my motion because I would never want to do anything to hurt the resource. And that's, I hadn't looked at it in that aspect. You know, I think there's some controls that maybe in the future we could look at as far as female subquotas. But like you said, there's a lot of changes this year. So if I can do that, I'd like to.
Yeah, you can do that. Motion's off the table. Other motions, other discussion.
I have another one.
Try another one, Mike.
I'm quite concerned with this whole scenario. You know, there's a lot of things going on with it.
Hang on, Mike. Claire, is there confusion down here?
I was just asking, are you recanting that motion then?
The motion's recanted.
Do we need a second to recount that motion?
Okay. Would you second it?
I'll second it, yeah.
Do you want a second? It sounds like Claire's going to second that.
I was just worried about the...
Motion's off the table.
Thank you.
Looking for other motions. The other point that the division made is, in light of the new black bear management plan, there is room for additional harvest opportunity, and that's the proposal before us tonight, without coming up with new ones of our own. More discussion? Other motions? Go ahead.
I have another motion, and that is on this 90 90 tags in 3 years on LaSalle and 90 tags on San Juan. I think that's excessive, and I don't think that we have any controls in place to see to it that we don't harvest these females with cubs. We could theoretically kill three bears with every one you shoot. I think a cautious approach is what we should go, and I'd like to propose that we limit that to 10 on each unit, 10 a year for the next 3 years.
State that again, for LaSalle and San Juan?
For LaSalle and San Juan, these are the two that they have 30 each year for
spot
the next
stock.
3 years. Spot and stock, yes.
I'd like to see instead that of 30, that'd be 10.
10. My reasoning is to go at this a little more cautiously. There's a lot of changes in this new proclamation, this new plan, and 90 tags in 3 years, that's, you can't recover from that very quickly.
Motion by Mike. Anybody second that?
Okay.
They're a little hesitant being outside of the southern region, would be my guess.
Okay.
Motion fails for lack of second. Other motions?
I have one more.
Rusty's got one. He may beat you to the punch.
Okay.
Go ahead, Rusty.
I'd like to make a motion to accept the recommendations of the division on the bear.
As presented. Motion by Rusty to present the bear proclamation presented, seconded by Sam.
Give Sam.
Other discussion?
I think that you had some other stuff you wanted to talk about before this vote.
Yeah, I did.
Just out of respect.
There was, during the bear management committee, they stated on these three harvest objectives there would be no hounds involved. Now we got hounds involved on two of them. I'd like to see it go back to the original plan and keep harvest objective without hounds. I don't understand why they more or less went back on the recommendation of the committee. And the rethrow and the 9 mile are mostly private ground, and that's why they were put in the harvest objective. A dog cannot read a no trespassing sign. It's going to create more conflict, more problems than there is now. What it was put in place for was so those private landowners could take care of problem bear. We don't need hounds involved.
Good point. We have a motion and a second. More discussion relative to the motion. Go ahead, Lane.
I would just like to clarify the motion. If you look at the handout, the fall harvest objective on 9 mile is no hounds and no bait.
I think that's been amended. There's been three of them out in the last month.
Yeah, the one I'm looking at right here that was handed out tonight.
Is that correct?
On 9 mile, John, isn't that correct?
Fall harvest objective is over-the-counter, spot and stock, no hounds, no bait.
That's what it says there.
Maybe I didn't make that, maybe I flubbed that earlier, but yes, there's the three of them. Okay. And the Wasatch current, the first is the spring harvest objective. And we've got ending weapon, we've got hounds, no bait. The second is the 9 mile, and again, that's a private land thing. Fall harvest objective, no hounds, no bait. Right. And our third, again, is the beaver, fall harvest objective, no hounds, no bait.
Okay.
And the way the plan is written in terms of the private land categories, it's not a private lands. It's largely as much as anything nuisance that's driving that decision to go into the harvest objective. And what the plan says is that if there's if an overabundance of public land, then it's not a suitable place for it. These units don't have an overabundance of the public land. There's a lot, for instance, I think in that Wasatch, there's tribal lands, there's a lot of private lands in there, and there's enough that it still fits well within the categories for the plan to answer that question. Should have made clear earlier, sorry.
Nice points made. So the motion's still on the table to pass the recommendations as presented. Any other discussion?
Just a little discussion. Like I said, I'm just slightly concerned about the Wasatch Current Creek Bennequin unit being the way that it's drawn up. I just feel that there's only a handful of archery people every unit every time, so it's, you know, they made the comment that we're not taking that much from that many people, but it's kind of a big deal if that's the unit you've been trying to put in for. I mean, if you're still willing to take that risk, I look at that and I kind of get a little bit of heartburn with that, just with opportunity. And I also think that there's a little bit of room, and I understand that there's a chance to start taking more females, but I think that there's a little bit of room there to extend each unit, each bear unit, even if it's four or five days, just everything to end on the third. And I mean, I'm not a cattleman, but if I was, I think I would want every one of those units extended to June 3rd at least there, just to try to help. I know I've asked Mac in the past how many cows is enough to feed too many, and he's always said one to lose to a bear. And so I would just, and I guess this is where there's already been a motion on the table. I didn't get a chance to discuss.
You can make
this
an
before.
Amendment.
I would like to make an amendment that we just extend those units statewide, just to all end on the at least the third. I mean, I'd like to extend them all. I'd like to make an amendment to the motion that we extend all bear hunting in the state 7 days.
Anybody want to second that? Okay, let's see if we get a second first. Amendment fails. More discussion on the motion on the table.
No, I was going to discuss the one that...
it's off the table.
It's off the table.
Well, let's call for a vote. If anybody has any further discussion or any other amendments, it's been a good discussion tonight. We've had good attendance. Those in favor of recommendations as proposed by the division tonight for bears, please vote in favor. Those against? One against. How about we take a 10-minute recess?
Second, good thing.
8:30. Moving on in the agenda, the Falconry Guidebook and Rule. Jimmy Parrish, did you bring us a bunch of controversy tonight, Jimmy?
Me? Never.
The floor is yours.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the RAC, DWR staff, and others in the audience, tonight we're presenting the 5-year review of Rule R65720, and that's the rule that regulates falconry in Utah. And we're dead again. Do that. There we go. Okay. All right. I hit the right button, right? Hit F5.
What'd you do, Jimmy?
I didn't do anything.
I didn't do nothing.
Break it.
Good escape. Can't escape. There we go. Okay, now hit F5.
No. Let's do it this way.
All right, there we go. Okay. In your packets, there's a copy of the rule with specific pages that have been highlighted, and I'll be referring to those as we go through the presentation. And also, the very last page on your packet was the two tables to be included in the guidebook. They were a little bit unclear in the packets as they went out. That was my fault with the one Stacy sent out. So I have provided a better copy tonight with front and back. Does anyone not have one of those guidebook tables? Okay, great. What we'll be presenting is a brief overview of falconry in Utah. Some of you have not seen the falconry rule before, and so I'll just give a real quick overview of falconry in Utah. And then there have been some actions that have taken place since we brought the rule around the last time, which was about 2 years ago, and I'll go into details on that. And then I'll present a summary of what our recommendations are for the five-year review. Overall, we believe we've again increased opportunity for the falconers, and I hope you'll see that as we go through this tonight. We have redefined falconry. Basically, without reading all of this, unless you just want to, we're placing more of an emphasis on hunting with these birds. We do have individuals in the state that like to keep these birds. But I'm encouraging the falconers and doing some other things with the rule to get them out there and get them hunting with the birds, and a considerable number of the falconers do actually hunt with their birds. The definition also includes terms on training and care and housing and transporting the birds when they go out in the field to hunt with them. The number of falconers, we have 190 licensed falconers in the state right now. Most of them are in the northern part of the state. In the central and northern regions. And Davis, Salt Lake, and Weber counties account for about 85% of that 190 licensed falconers that we have. Most of the falconers in this area are in Washington County. We have 18 in your region. And there's the breakout region by region, 127 in central and 40 in northern, so 167 out of that 90, and then 18 in your region, 3 and 2 in northeast and southeast. There are three classes of falconer. This is pretty much nationwide. These classes have been in place since the federal rule was in place, and I'll go over that more in just a little bit. Basically, apprentice class, general class, and master class. Excuse me. The difference in those classes is based on age and experience. The apprentice class is the most restricted class in terms of species and numbers of birds that the individuals can keep and hunt with. We have 46 apprentices in the state right now. After 2 years of experience, they can qualify for an upgrade to general. We have 71 general class falconers now, and then after an additional 5 years from general to master, they can upgrade, and we have 74 master class falconers in the state now. The master class is the least restricted, and we'll see that as we go through the birds that they can keep here in just a minute. In terms of action, since the last, since the rule was revised a little over 2 years ago, up until January of 2010, the falconry in Utah and most of the states was a dual permit system. Individuals had to have a state COR as well as a federal permit to practice falconry. The Fish and Wildlife Service in September of 2008 revised their rule, and basically they wanted to turn falconry back over to the states, for the states to administer falconry. We did that, and they set new standards for the states that each state had to comply with, and that was when we brought out our rule 2 years ago, and in January 2010, our new rule was approved by the service and the RACs and the board. And that's the rule that we're talking about tonight. However, even with the 2 years, just 2 years ago having a brand new rule, it's still within that five-year review cycle, and that's what the presentation and the action that we're asking for tonight is about. Since the last review, falconry will now be regulated solely by the states, so DWR will regulate falconry in Utah. There's a limited take of wild raptors. Only the species restrictions are by class. The falconers can now report their activities electronically. There's an online system for them to do that. Anytime they make any changes, swap birds, get new birds, or whatever, they have to report that, and there's an electronic system in place to accommodate that. We did require all birds to be banded at one time. That's been relaxed. There's only four species that are required for banding, and the falconers have the option of actually having a microchip implant put into the birds if that's what they choose to do. The facilities requirements have been relaxed in the sense that raptors can now be housed inside of an individual's home if they choose to do that. That's been a common practice for a long time. Basically, the service made that completely legal. They do have to allow inspection in the home if they choose to do that, but that was part of the federal rule that we went ahead and put into the Utah rule as well. A few new definitions that have been added. The falconry definition was one of them, and those are all in the current copy of the rule. And then we already had an apprentice class of 3 years where they could buy a COR for 3 years. What we've added since then is general and master class can now purchase a 5-year COR if they choose to do so. I would refer you now to the copy of the rule because I will go over a few pages in particular of some of our recommendations for the current review. There are several editorial corrections and clarifications of terms. Those are in those sections and pages that are listed there. I don't think we need to go over those page by page. It's mostly editorial types of things, some cleanup on some section numbers, and those kinds of things. So I think that's pretty self-explanatory and pretty straightforward. In Section 3 of the rule and Section 16, one of the increase in opportunities that the service allowed that we agreed with, the minimum age has now been changed from 14 to 12. This was actually already done in another part of rule, but it didn't happen before the rewrite that we did after the federal rule, so now we're having to change that in our rule to comply, be in compliance with the change from 14 to 12 as the minimum age. In Section 1, Section 2, and in Section 11, there has been a systematic revision. That's little different term for the way taxa are grouped. The American Ornithologist Union has recently split the order Falconiformes into two orders, Accipitriformes and Falconiformes. They retained that name in the revision. The same group of birds are still listed. There was no change in the groupings of birds or the number of birds by order. They just split out the groupings into two separate orders instead of one. And so we're changing that terminology in the rule to comply with that action and to reflect that. There is one clarification on take and on page 16 and then on 17 and 18. If you would please just turn to that page in the rule because I really need to make that clear on our understanding of, it's actually section 16 and 17 pages on page 13 in your packet there. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has a national list of species of conservation concern, and they are... Initially, they were requiring all three classes of falconer to be limited in the number of, in the species that they could take that were on that list. They've now revised that to where their apprentice class only is restricted, and the general and master class falconers are not restricted on those lists. So on page 13 and sections 17 and 18, that's why I've highlighted those two sections. The change that you see in your packet, that change will be deleted. That change will not take place. It's not necessary. So that happens after the packets went out, and we didn't. We're just going to clear it up in the racks, and didn't send out an additional copy of the rule. And then the guidebook tables, I'll get to here in just a minute. Okay, again, apprentice class falconers, they may not possess the nestlings. They can't go to the nest and take the wild birds out of the nest. They cannot possess imprinted raptors. Those are very difficult to deal with, and we just didn't feel that the apprentices have the experience to deal with those. They cannot possess hybrids of any North American species. They can possess hybrids of others, but non-North American species only. And they cannot possess the wild-caught species listed in that national list of species of concern that I just mentioned. They also cannot possess golden eagles, and they cannot possess IS peregrine falcons. General class cannot possess eagles, golden or bald eagles, and they also cannot, or that needs to be changed. That's the change. They can possess the species that are of concern on the services list, and that was the change that we didn't have time to make before we sent the packets out. And master class falconers can possess anything they wish, including those species of concern on the national list, but they cannot possess bald eagles. And back to the rule again. There was clarification on replacement of wild-caught raptors on Section 21, page 14. It wasn't clear that can only replace two wild-caught birds. Those two classes can only replace two wild-caught birds in a year. Sale and barter of captive-bred raptors on Section 21 and page 15. That's only for general and master class permit holders. For facilities inspection, we have changed that somewhat. An individual could send an email in to request an inspection. That caused us some problems, so now we're asking that they call in to the division office in their region and request and schedule an inspection of their facilities. And that change is reflected on sections 5, 8, and 10 on the pages that are listed there. And then the last one, the revised falconry guidebook tables, and that's the table that that you have before you. There's a front and back apprentice class falconers on one side and the general and master class falconers on the other. The species lists are the same. The main restriction is with golden eagles. Again, master class falconers are the only ones that can possess and fly golden eagles, but they cannot take a golden eagle out of the nest. So that's a restriction that they have on that species. Harris's hawks are non-native to Utah, but that's a very popular bird with the falconers, great bird to catch rabbits with. So we've asked that they only can obtain individuals from captive bred stock, licensed falconers, or other states. And there are individuals that are breeding them in captivity now in the state. Rough-legged hawk, also a non-native, and they also need to be taken either from licensed falconers or other states. They can catch these birds in the winter. There are rough-legged hawks in Utah in good numbers in the winter, and then they go back to the north to nest in the spring and summer. Ferruginous hawk, another one we're restricting on individuals obtained either from captive bred stock or licensed falconers or other states, not to take the birds out of the wild. And I believe the last one is deer falcon. They're also non-native, but they do occur in winter in the northern part of Utah, and they are being bred, and they're available from other falconers in other states as well. And peregrine falcon, last but not least. Apprentice class falconers, they can only possess a non-imprint, non-hybrid peregrine obtained from captive stock or licensed falconers. Or from other states. They can go out of state and bring and obtain a bird if they choose to do that. So in summary of our recommendations, the editorial and other correction of clarification of terms should be pretty straightforward. Lowering the minimum age from 14 to 12. The taxonomic revisions of the splitting of the order Falconiformes just to reflect the actions by the American Ornithologist Union. And then additional clarifications on take and possession of wild birds, replacement of birds, sale and barter of birds, and facilities inspections. And then the tables, revised tables in the falconry guidebook. And that's all I have. So.
Thanks, Jimmy. Questions from the rack? All you falconers? Sure, Lane.
How do you capture one of these birds? I mean, that's quite. How do they go about capturing a wild bird?
Well, the way I used to do it when I was flying birds is I'd get me a 5-pound bag of salt and try to put that on its tail. That seemed to work the best. But yeah. Yeah, right. There's a variety of ways. We do allow a take of by class again of the birds in their nest, but not for the apprentice class. So they can locate a nest, actually go to the nest in the right time of year. We have some in the rule. We have an age restriction. They can't take them too young. They can't take them. Well, if they take them too old, they're probably going to bail out on them anyway. But so they can take them out of the nest. There are a variety of ways to catch the birds after they're already on the wing and in the wild and out making a living for themselves. Usually, there's some sort of bait involved. You can legally use, just common pigeon, house sparrow, and European starling, and now, collared doves, as bait to catch the birds. And, But when we were doing migration studies, we would even go to the extent of putting up a blind and large size high nets, and as they come through on migration, and we'd have pigeons as bait, and they come in to make a pass at the pigeon, and then we'd catch them in the nets. So there's a variety of ways that they can use to catch the birds. So.
Other questions? Question, Sam. Bait deer.
Just curiosity here. I see that in your presentation, this Harris Hawk picture, it showed them with a bunch of rabbits.
Right.
Do you have a season? Do they have to follow the general hunting seasons for that?
They do. They have to.
And when they're training their hawk, how do you tell him, you know, don't get that cottontail, it's out of season. How do you do that?
Well, if they do, they have to leave the cottontail lay if it's out of season. But most of them are pretty savvy on the seasons. And the way they train, well, there is some training, but basically you condition the bird to allow you to be present when they do what they're going to do anyway. So most of these birds have pretty much a natural search image for whatever their preferred prey is. And Harris's hawks, they take rabbits. So there's not a whole lot of training to teach them to catch rabbits. That's what they kind of do when they're out there on their own. It's more of getting them used to your presence while you're out there doing it. And that takes a lot of time. But if a bird does take something like with waterfowl, if they take a species they're not supposed to take, once they launch and go after something, they're going to make a kill on something, and you have very little control over that. But when that happens, the falconers are supposed to leave it lay, and report that, and pick the bird up and go on to and try for something else. So if they do get something out of season or the wrong species.
So we'd rather waste it and let the hawk eat it?
Well, either that or take your chances if the CO's up there on the hill watching you. But no, that's the way, that's what they're supposed to do. So
nothing's wasted, right? Any other questions?
That doesn't happen very often. It really doesn't. So.
Thanks, Jimmy. Any questions from the audience? I don't have any comment cards. So we're ready for a motion. Discussion. Lane.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we accept a... Just a minute, I got to put my glasses on. Rule R657-20 as presented by the division.
So moved by Lane. Seconded by Dale. Any further discussion? Those in favor? Those against? That looked unanimous. Thank you. Item number 7, introduction of Bonneville Cutthroat Trout, North Fork of Corn Creek. Richard Hepworth.
I got to lower this, sorry.
Wear your snake leggings up there, will you?
This is an item that we presented at the fishing regulation meeting here a couple months ago. As an informational item, I'm just back here as an action item to get your approval, if possible. What we have is the North Fork of Corn Creek. There's a tributary. It's a tributary to Corn Creek, but the issue is there's no fish in there. We saw that as an opportunity to increase the range of our Bonneville cutthroat trout. We've got a stream fairly close to that. It's called Pole Creek. It's a tributary to Clear Creek. It's got a remnant population of cutthroat. What we'd like to be able to do is just move some of those fish from Pole Creek over to the North Fork of Corn Creek. It'll help us with our conservation efforts for Bonneville cutthroat. In addition, provide some more fishing opportunity for that area. So that the nuts and bolts of that.
Thank you. I remember talking about this some time back. Any questions for Richard? How does the County Commission feel about this again?
The County Commission has fully supported it. It is in the RDCC process as we speak.
Yes, sir. We're ready.
I wanted to make a comment first, can I?
Sure.
Okay. I called a friend of mine that fishes Corn Creek quite regular and asked him if he'd ever fished that North Fork and said, yeah, I mean, that's a terrible place to fish. Can't catch any there. He is really excited about this.
Good to hear.
I make the motion that we approve the item as presented.
Thank you. Claire, motion by Claire, seconded by Rusty. Sure.
When would they allow fishing after the transplant? Would it just be opened up right after?
Yep, there'd be no regulation changes. It's general regulations right now, 4-fish limit, no restrictions on bait, and we won't make any changes to that.
Perfect.
We found in those transplant, when we're doing these type of things, it works just fine. We don't generally have any issues.
That's perfect. Thank you.
Motion on the table to accept. Any other discussion? Those in favor? It's unanimous. Thank you, Richard. The last item I have under other business was that schedule, RAC meeting schedule. Have you seen that? Did we get that out? The packet or out front? Good. I didn't change much from last year. Thought we'd move the meeting we just had in Richfield to Cedar City. Other than that, Beaver's the primary location with Richfield and Cedar City as fallbacks. There's not one there for Washington County or Kanab, Panguitch. I mean, we've moved around to some degree, but it seems, you know, to strike a balance, if we have a pattern that we don't have to keep guessing and maybe the public doesn't, but not 100% Beaver, but we're moving it around. Any feeling strongly one way or the other? You have heartburn with some of those? Yeah, I think that's going to be a big meeting. There's, as you notice, there's fewer meetings next year, but we may have some longer meetings, especially with that combined big game meeting. If not, I'd entertain a motion on that schedule. If we'll maintain flexibility for the start times, I guess, as we see the agenda stack up, if that's okay. But this locations and the Wildlife Board's already set the dates, but if we can let Doug's staff know that this is where we're going to be having the following meetings, that'd be helpful.
I make the motion that we accept this schedule. That sounds good to me, and we'll be notified later on times.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Thank you. Seconded by Paul. Those in favor? Great. Any other business? Motion to adjourn. Thank you.